Hey everybody, just want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. This show would not be possible without the support of our good friends and sponsors. This week we have Comey, which is the ultimate recipe and menu management software. You can find more information about Comey at www.comey.com. That's K-O-H-M-E-E. And it is the software that we use to manage all of our recipes and our menus. And it's an amazing software. Check it out. And also the International Sous Vide Association. They actually have their summit coming up here in August. You're going to want to check that out. I'll be a keynote speaker. There's also an incredible list of sous vide experts that are on the panel. They're going to be doing demonstrations and speaking. And now this year, it was supposed to be in San Francisco. However, it will be a virtual summit. It's still going to be amazing. Check it out at their website.
3, 2, 1.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Hey everybody, Rosendale here for another episode of our podcast. This week we are talking again with Chef Ken Hess. He is a pit master and a classically trained chef. Ken and I worked at the Greenbrier together, spent lots of years there going through the apprenticeship program, and we've stayed in touch over the years. He has partnered with us on our barbecue series for our cooking classes. All of the participants, I can tell you, just loved having him, in addition to just incredible knowledge. We all ate very, very well, let me tell you. So let's dig in and hear what Ken has to say.
I think for me, there's a few things. The Big Green Egg is one of the older companies in America in terms of, in 1974, Ed Fisher brought a Komodo-style cooker over from Japan and then designed the Big Green Egg. I like the Big Green Eggs versus the Kamado Joes and some of the other smokers just because of I like the construction, but I also don't know if it's sometimes just because I'm so familiar with them. I've used them on and off since 2003, so you're talking about 16 years of familiarity.
It's like you get bonded.
Yeah, I get bonded. There's some of them, though, that I don't like that they've drilled through the ceramic to attach their nest. I feel like it's a fault in design, maybe. Some of them have better attachments. The Monolith Grill, which is made by Barbecue Guru now, has a little bit better of a setup for indirect, direct grilling where they have grates that you can set up charcoal only one half. I feel like that's maybe sometimes a little bit better of a design. But in terms of somebody starting with, and one of our students asked today, she said, what grill would you start with? She said, not for my restaurant, but for me at home. And I said, well, what level of participation do you want in this barbecue equipment? If you want something that's easy, that you can set your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth to, and you're not worried about it while you're at work, then go get a Traeger pellet grill. It's easy, it produces a great quality barbecue, and you're gonna get a great product. Now, I don't feel that the Traegers can sear a steak off as high of a temperature as they say. And so now my other question is, how many grills do you want to have? If you want just one grill that can do everything, I think the Komodo style, like a Big Green Egg, you can bake smoked pizzas on them. You can bake bread on them. You can bake a cake on it, but you can also do low and slow 225 pork butts.
Like super versatile.
Yeah, and I think so now the question is, what's your budget? How many grills do you want? If you're okay with having 5 to 6 grills and that's your thing, then by all means, there's lots of different ones that are out there. Now, if you're starting to start a business up, I think some of the ones like, there's a four, they're Stumps cookers. Stumps are gravity-fed charcoal feed where the weight of the charcoal presses down over the fire box, and you can fit 12 to 15 pork butts on there.
Wow.
That's a great one for a starting caterer business coming up. Old Hickories, which are the gas assist and wood, like we have here at the back of Route 657. We've got a very large capacity where you can fit 24 or 30 briskets on there at once, which is great for high volume like the restaurant here. But they also have smaller models. They have a BPS smoker, which almost looks like a mailbox. It's a curvature to help with convection. It's 4 26-inch cubic racks on there. You can fit 18 pork butts on. Now that range right there is $7,000 maybe. But if you're talking about the bigger mobile units like Old Hickory has here, you're looking at $26,000-$27,000. So as you're growing and building, that's for where you're at. For County Smoke and where we're trying to go with our brick and mortar, we want an offset Texas style smoker. People are gonna come to see my wife's and ours barbecue because we're chef driven, we're tradesmen of the barbecue craft, and we're wanting that reputation of being all wood and charcoal. So for me, the Old Hickory, which is a great product, a great family, isn't the image and the barbecue that we want to produce. No, it's not in our DNA for what we want to produce. So for me, the 1,500 gallon offset cookers that are the Texas style are what we're going for. But now, if you're a home cook, I mean, I've really been impressed with the Gateway drum smokers that we've been using. I thought the tri-tips today turned out wonderful on them. I feel like the pork steaks that we did yesterday, great, but I like that there's a larger distance away from the charcoal base, so there was no flare-up, no fire, but you're getting that old school shoveling the coals underneath your product, flavor of that fat and juices dripping on the charcoal and sizzling and evaporating, and that's a whole different smoke flavor profile than just the charcoal or wood that's smoking away.
Yeah, it's actually that was great, and also like you said, I like dripping the sauce and the sauce like dripping to the coals and getting that smell. Like you can smell the all the ingredient that you already have in the sauce, that sweetness and everything. I think it was really cool. It's really beautiful.
And then you know, for if you're going like you're a chef of a country club or a resort or a hotel. I think the Art Flame has given out one of the best live action interaction pieces of equipment that's out there right now in barbecue.
They're not your sponsor either, right?
They're not my sponsor. I've just enjoyed working with them here while we've been doing these projects. I think that it's a great, people want to see the chefs cooking. That's why open kitchens are popular now. That's why all of these restaurants that see the chefs interacting or the chef's table area, that's what people want to see. But how do you relate that to a large catering thing out in a ballroom? Well, if you have a patio that your staff is out there searing off kebabs and searing off grilled corn and doing things in front of them, we used to have some crepe makers at the Greenbrier where one of us would be making the crepes out in front of the guests, and then the pastry chefs would be filling them with apple seasoning or and then whipped cream and stuff, and the guests love seeing this like dessert crepe station. This is what the Art Flame reminds me of, is those interactive stations where I feel like if you're a caterer or a casino rep or hotel resort person, you're upping your presentation for your guest.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we get that a lot about like the Art Flame, that it's kind of like it brings you back all of those memories, like getting together with your family, with friends or this. Mm-hmm. And actually I've seen it in some hotels that they use it back in Miami, and they use it for that. Like it gives you that theater that it kind of like lost in the time by now. But it kind of like brings that back, like live fire. Oh. Even that after you eat the food, you can just keep dumping wood or charcoal, and you get that moment to keep sharing with your family and your friends.
I mean, one of the things, like I said, I have six big green eggs. The mini max, which can maybe fit four burgers, I would say 9 times out of 10, when we're grilling out, my 5 and 6 year old want to make toast marshmallows over it. The Art Flame is perfect for that. Like, the dinner's done, the kids are around the fire, and now they're joined burning their marshmallows and all that. I think it's a great interactive thing for your family, too.
Yeah, and also they have a lot of different kind of accessories, and beside that, it's kind of like they have lower bases and everything, so it's kind of like it's pretty cool for that. Now, talking a little bit about the different kind of smoke, there's many people that they like smoking and everything, and they're like, oh no, I want to smoke some meat, I want to smoke some brisket, because I just watched this YouTube channel, or I just watched Food Network and they did this, but they never got to the deep details talking about smoke. I know that there's different kind of smoke because you don't want the food to be like too smoky, or like not to have the right amount of smoke either to like to produce the flavors that you want. So what is like your opinion on that, and which one of the different kind of a smoke that you can find?
I think one thing that people, when they start to smoke, especially with smaller home cookers, is they feel like more smoke is going to be better. I have one of my friends borrowed my Big Green Egg to cook for his future in-laws, and he decided to burn whole logs in there while he was doing a couple chickens. Well, for the egg, it was too much smoke, too much fire in there, and the chickens became acritic and bitter because there was so much smoke in there that was being held in the chamber, and it was a dirty smoke where it wasn't burning cleanly, it was more of a smoldering. You need the combustion and that heat. I mean, I was reading the Modernist Cuisine last night. It was saying that for the wood chemical compounds to be producing the right smoke flavors, it needs to be combusting at over almost 700 degrees. So you need a fire that's pretty intense, which is why we talked about having charcoal chimneys that are well lit, that the coals are white, and then building your fire on top of that, because you need that base fire. Now, as the smoke travels through a smoker, it cools down. So now that's why you can cook at 225, but you still have a fire that's combusting at 700-900 degrees. So another thing that I think amateur home cooks don't do right, or new novice smokers, is that they don't treat smoke as an ingredient of their barbecue. You know, you measure out your salt, your pepper, your garlic powder, your paprika, maybe your specialty tamarind or something, and you work on the sauce, but then they don't think about the smoke as part of an ingredient. And I think that that's a big mistake. Smoke is just as important as salt and pepper, and it can be overly smoked or over salty or over too much pepper and all of that as well. Now, another thing is when you start a smoker up and you close it down, and it looks like it's billowing out white, huge clouds of smoke like a locomotive.
Yeah.
That's generally bad, dirty smoke. You're looking for that light blue haze where you can barely see the smoke coming out of the smoker. That's then when you put the product on. If you put the product on while the smoker's still coming to temperature and getting hot and billowing out gray, even black smoke, you're messing up your food, because especially early in the cooking process, that's the first flavors of smoke that are being penetrating your meat, and that's going to develop a bad, even if you get to the good smoke later, you've put a layer of bad smoke and a critic bitter taste on top for everything else to build on, and it just ruins your meal.
So basically the three main smoke that you can get is gray, white, and blue.
Yeah, gray, white, I mean, you can get black smoke too, but you really want that thin blue smoke, hazy, where you can barely see it. And you may have to like even lean down and try to get some like trees behind it or a building behind it so you can kind of see the wisp coming up. But you're still getting a lot of smoke flavor. And I tell people like at contests and stuff, when everyone's first lighting up the smokers, it smells differently. It smells dirty. It smells like bad burning wood and stuff. And then later in the night, once people have started putting on their briskets and their shoulders, you can smell it in the air. You can smell smoke. You can smell the spices starting to caramelize and sugars and the fats dripping on the coals. But it's a different smell than when people are starting a contest and when you're in the middle of the night. And you want to be having your meat smell like that middle of the night at a contest.
That's great. What do you prefer to wrap the material, like plastic wrap, aluminum, mm-hmm. or butcher paper, for the ribs or brisket or anything
or
that you anything that you use for like smoke? Like, okay. Which one is your favorite? Why? And what other people use, for example, like Texas barbecue and other kind of barbecue, why they use that, or what you think about it?
So I prefer to wrap when I'm doing barbecue. If we were doing ribs for a restaurant, I wouldn't wrap. I don't add the seasoning. I don't add layers of flavor, because our sauce that we finish with has great flavor, and I'm not doing competition barbecue. If I was going to do competition barbecue, I would do a foil wrap where you're wrapping and adding ingredients into the foil to add a more intense flavor for the judges. Now, when the ribs come off the smoker, I just wrap in saran wrap. Maybe glaze with a little light sauce, and then we finish it when it's time for the guests when they order their ribs. For brisket, I used to use just saran wrap and foil, But now I've actually gone the way of the butcher paper. I actually wrap around 170, which is right when the stall is about coming out, and I'll wrap in butcher paper. And some of this is through research of other people that I've known, but the saran wrap, or the foil when you're wrapping during the cooking process, doesn't allow the steam to escape. So it almost steams the brisket.
So it keeps cooking it.
It keeps cooking. It helps accelerate the cooking process. But sometimes it can damage the bark, I feel. So there's a lot of, obviously with Aaron Franklin wrapping his in butcher's paper, there's been a lot of focus on that. There have been a lot of people who've done, like Meathead, that I know that is a great website, AmazingRibs.com. He's done some research on it. I was reading that people were saying that butcher paper is better. We went and got some, and actually the bark on our brisket for County Smoke is something that we've been really focused on, constantly trying to upgrade it, get it better, make it nicer, make it more like that Texas style, but still have our own flavor profiles. And when we switched to the butcher paper, we just got a lot better results. And with holding them, the butcher paper holds up nicely. I was afraid it would tear or get too easy to do, rip apart or anything. But so for briskets, we're using butcher paper now for County Smoke. Now for the pork butts, I don't like to wrap at all. Sometimes I'll put a loose wrap over, because in our charcoal smoker for our trailer, when I'm changing, we can go about 10, 12 hours on a load of charcoal and wood. Sometimes your pork butts and briskets aren't done. I will loosely wrap in foil so that when I do the charcoal change, that the dust and soot doesn't end up on my product. So I will do a loose tin foil wrap or tent over the meat. And then when the shoulders are coming off, or the pork butts are coming off, we will take our Q-Tang vinegar sauce and we'll take a layer of saran wrap down, put the pork butt on it, layer on our Q-Tang vinegar sauce, because it's a lot of the same process as we use the Big Bob Gibson's, and then I'll wrap that in saran wrap and then cool it down a little bit, then put it in a warmer, like a Winston Sea Vat.